The next big initiative to put in place a new system of global order came against the background of the First World War and the efforts by President Woodrow Wilson to create a permanent international organization made up of the leading powers of the day and with the specific aim of preventing war. In a speech delivered to the U.S. Senate on January 22, 1917, President Wilson said, and I quote, "There must be not a balance of power, but a community of power, not organized rivalries, but an organized common peace." Kissinger, in his book on world order, published in 2014, notes that Wilson's concept of community of power would in time reemerge as the principle of collective security. The League of Nations would be founded on a moral principle, he said. The universal opposition to military aggression as such, whatever its source, its target, or its proclaimed justification. There is a streak of idealism that runs through Wilson's many interventions in support of the League that is really quite touching. One senses the heavy burden of responsibility weighing on him because of the United States' participation in the war. In a speech in 1919, he noted, and I quote, "My clients are the children. My clients are the next generation. They do not know what promises and bonds I undertook when I ordered the armies of the United States to the soil of France. But I know, and I intend to redeem my pledges to the children. They shall not be sent upon a similar errand." The League Covenant, which is the founding document of the League of Nations, contained many innovations. Article 8, for instance, established provisions for disarmament. Several articles provided for peaceful settlement of disputes and arbitration and conciliation. Wilson believed that nations would not so easily go to war if they could consult and discuss their grievances and openly explore ways to resolve them in peaceful ways. The cooling-off period embedded in the covenant were intended to avoid a repetition of the events of 1914, when Europe mindlessly stumbled upon the bloodiest war ever undertaken. But unfortunately, the League foundered when the U.S. Senate voted against it. Some thought that the application of the principle of collective security would translate quickly into war, not peace, negating the very purpose of the League. The burden of interventions might overwhelmingly fall on the United States, Great Britain, France, and Japan, something that would put the United States in the role of world policeman or worse, dictator, and damage the soul of democracy, and so on. And there were, of course, Senator Henry Cabot Lodge's 14 killer reservations, which were rejected by President Wilson. Regrettably, the ratification of the covenant turned quickly into a partisan political issue within the United States, made worse by President Wilson suffering a massive stroke in October of 1919. Weakened physically, he was not able to take the leadership role that would have been necessary to ensure victory on the Senate floor. On the 19th of March of 1920, the cabinet was voted down by a margin of 7 votes. The significance of the League may well lie in the fact that it was a first attempt to pool national sovereignties together to deal with the problem of armed conflicts and aggression. It was a distinctive milestone, a tenuous first step in a long process intended to strengthen and improve the effectiveness of mechanisms of international cooperation. I'd like to make a small aside here to share with you some passages from a very fascinating document which was sent by Abdu'l-Bahá, the head of the Baha'i religious community, in 1919, to the Central Organization for a Durable Peace at The Hague. And I think that this is a document of historical significance as it conveys the views of the head of a world faith to a gathering of prominent civil society leaders. In this letter, Abdu'l-Bahá says, "There is not one soul whose conscience does not testify that in this day there is no more important matter in the world than that of universal peace. He says in the letter that efforts for peace must be supplemented by other measures that go beyond issues of conflict and security, that other principles must underpin the search for peace. He states that, and I quote, "Religion must be the cause of fellowship and love. If it becomes the cause of estrangement, then it is not needed, for religion is like a remedy. If it aggravates the disease, then it becomes unnecessary." Properly understood, he said, religion, quote, "trains man, educates morals, compels the adoption of virtues, and is the all-inclusive power which guarantees the felicity of the world of mankind." He condemned in very strong words misguided nationalisms, saying that, quote, "God has set up no frontier between France and Germany." And he warned that if this conception of patriotism remains, it will be the primary cause of the world's destruction. He refers to weapons as the malignant fruits of material civilization, and that had humanity been more inclined to the divine in us, quote, "these fiery weapons would never have been invented, and human energy would have been wholly devoted to useful inventions and praiseworthy discoveries." He speaks about the importance of education to immunize humanity against the destructive forces of ignorance. And most importantly, in the letter, he calls for the establishment of a supreme tribunal made up of members of the world's parliaments to be at the basis of a new global order based on the rule of law, which is, in fact, a very early call for the setting up of what today is called a World Parliamentary Assembly, a subject to which we will come back in a few minutes.